This is The Guardian.
Hi, Laura Murphy Oates here. Like a lot of people, in the pandemic, I took up some new hobbies that can be done at home, including gaming, slow cooking, and chess. I've actually become pretty obsessed with chess and even watched instructional videos on how to do the Queen's Gambit move, clearly inspired by a certain Netflix series. If you have even a passing interest in chess, today's episode from our global news podcast, Today in Focus, is a really fascinating look at how computers have transformed this classic game and changed the way that elite competitions play out. Here's journalist Michael Safi with more.
On Wednesday, world chess champion Garry Kasparov tied Deep Blue, the IBM supercomputer that can examine 200 million positions per second.
You might not remember it, but a chess showdown held over a year between 1996 and 97 was a bad moment for humanity and a win for machines.
I was only in grade school back then, but it was this event that was getting sort of global media attention that just happened to be happening in my hometown.
One of the matches was played in Philadelphia, where Guardian sports writer Brian Armand Graham grew up.
You know, it was the first of these two six-game matches between the greatest player in the world, Garry Kasparov, and the IBM supercomputer known as Deep Blue.
Earlier in the week, Kasparov admitted he made a catastrophic blunder in game two.
You almost barely even knew it was happening in your hometown, but the fact that it was very interesting to me and caught my attention and really captured my imagination in a way that chess hasn't really let go of.
Are we missing something on the chessboard now that Kasparov sees? He looks disgusted.
The first match was played in 1996 and Kasparov won, you know, for the humans. Then they did a rematch, I believe, 15 months later in New York, and Deep Blue won that one. That was the first time a reigning world champion or any player, any human, was defeated by a computer under tournament conditions. It was freighted with a lot of deep symbolic significance, you know, this sort of sign that artificial intelligence was catching up with the sharpest human minds. 2 decades later, Arcade Fire wrote a song about it called Deep Blue, which frames it as the triumph of technology over human intelligence, almost as this generational loss of innocence.
A quarter of a century after Kasparov was beaten by a computer, the 1,500-year-old game of chess is going through another big moment. Technology has put the game in a bind. Thanks to the internet, the pandemic, and yes, the Netflix breakout hit, The Queen's Gambit, chess has never been more popular. But with the rise of super-intelligent chess computers at the very top level, in tournaments like this year's World Championships in Dubai, nobody was winning anymore.
It looks like we might be headed towards a draw. The position will repeat itself.
Game two in the World Championship match is also a draw.
This is still a draw because I don't think White's king can get much further into the position.
Had machines stolen the mystery and the beauty of chess? From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the 2021 Chess World Championship, and finally, a win for humanity in a long grudge match against computers. For those of us who don't know much about chess, you know, who think that one of the pieces is named the horse, for example, can you tell me about this tournament that's been going on through December, the World Chess Championship? Like, what's the history of the tournament?
I would say the one thing that's been consistent about the format over its 135 years is a champion that has held the title is defending his title against a challenger. For years, it was dominated by the Soviets until Bobby Fischer made the breakthrough win in 1972 over Boris Spassky.
You like to crush another man's ego?
Uh-huh. So when they go home that night, you know, they know
But then they can't kid themselves that they're so hot, you know.
You think that Russians are pretty worried about you at this moment?
Oh, yeah, they have been ever since I started playing chess.
Since then, it has become a much more global game, like many sports. You know, you have Magnus Carlsen, who's from Norway. You have Vishwanathan, who's from India. Wherever the championship tends to travel, the chess boom follows.
Well, I'm standing outside the hall, and I have so many young kids here, and they are all come here. So, guys, you have come here to do what?
What it's settled into over the last two decades is anywhere between 12 and 14 games. They play those games over the course of 3 weeks, and whoever has the most points at the end of those games, 1 point for a win, a half point for a draw, ends up winning the title. This year's prize fund is 2 million euros. Even more so than that, this is sort of the one chess event of the many chess events held around the year where sort of the public leans forward and pays attention.
It's the biggest event in chess, the World Championship match, with the reigning champion Magnus Carlsen taking on his challenger, Jan Nepomniachtchi.
Okay, so you've mentioned one of the players involved in this 2021 championship that's been happening over the past few weeks. That's the reigning champ, Magnus Carlsen. But tell me about the challenger, Ian Nepomniachtchi.
They're both 31 years old. Their paths to this encounter go back 20 years. They actually first played in European Youth Championships. Carlsen is from Norway. Nepomniachtchi is from Russia. Carlsen, who's reigned as the world champion since 2013, is a very familiar name, and he sort of even crossed over beyond sort of the chess world. This is his fourth defense of the title.
The Norwegian
camp is cheering.
Is going crazy.
And we have,
and
we have a new world champion.
Unbelievable.
Magnus Carlsen.
Champion of the world.
Undisputed.
Nepomniachtchi is ranked number 5th in the world, but he's made a very rapid climb over the past 2 years.
You have qualified for the match against Magnus Carlsen, so please tell us about your relationships with him, both over the board and out of the board.
Well, so we first played, I guess, European Championship under 12 in Spain in 2002. I guess we know each other for almost for 20 years.
He's known as a dynamic player, a guy with a winning record, a lot of confidence against Carlsen, and was expected to be a very live underdog in this match.
It's going to be a long battle, and it all starts today. It is finally time to say goodbye.
Tell me about where they're playing, both the location, but also, you know, physically, the actual space in which these two guys are battling it out.
They're playing at the Dubai Exhibition Center in a soundproof, purpose-built studio that could really best be described as a fishbowl, where it really emphasizes and underscores the sort of one-on-one nature of this sport. It's very, very physically and psychologically taxing.
Okay, Brian, and this particular championship started this year amid a deep debate in the chess world about whether something was broken at the heart of the game. Tell me about that.
Entering this year's World Championship match, there had been a string of 14 consecutive draws under the classical format in World Championship matches.
We are headed straight for a draw. This is disappointing.
That goes back to Carlsen's final two games in 2016. And then in 2018, all 12 of the classical matches were drawn.
Everything still all square here in London at the Chess World Championships.
So you're looking at a streak of consecutive draws at the top level, at the most visible event of World Championship chess.
I don't think you can make an argument it was great. I think it is possible to make an argument this wasn't a total disaster.
At the end of the day, this is sports, this is competition. People want decisive results. You know, you have draws in football, but if they were all draws, you know, there would be a problem and something would need to change.
So this is a really interesting problem, that people are basically unable to win anymore at these high levels. But let's try and figure out exactly how chess got to this point. You've talked a little bit about computers. I'd like to understand, how has the advance of this technology changed this ancient game?
When they were developing the IBM computer Deep Blue, that face Kasparov in the two matches in 1996 and 97. At that point, these computers are mainly relying on just brute computational force to evaluate millions of positions. And since then, these computer programs have advanced.
The DeepMind team at Google created AlphaZero. They gave it 4 hours and the basic rules of chess. The algorithm played millions of games against itself, and then it was pitted against Stockfish, the strongest computer at the time.
Yes, they do have chess championships between computers at this point. I would say that chess at this top level has very much become informed by this machine-like objectivity of these computers. And a lot of the players of the past studied from books and note cards wouldn't succeed playing their strategies today. Right now, this is the first generation of players that have grown up honing themselves against supercomputers, and it's sort of changed the style of play.
You say it's changed the style of play. How so?
You know, some have said that it strips the artistry from the game because chess, while it is a product of human intuition, and some have even called it a science, there's a very artistic aspect to it.
This young man's name is Bobby Fischer. He is 15 years old. And listen to this. Already, he is the United States chess champion.
You know, these brilliancies from over the years that are written about and talked about. A famous one would be Bobby Fischer's Queen Sacrifice in the game of the century in the late 50s. These things that look so beautiful over the board and are very aesthetically pleasing and understandable to the human eye, a lot of these moves aren't really played anymore because they're not best. Very often, when you're looking at a supercomputer evaluating the moves between two human players on the board, even the two best players in the world on the board, you know, very often the suggested move by the computer is something looks very unintuitive. It's the best move, but it's a move that a human might not be able to find because it's evaluating 30, 40, 50 moves down the road. What's remarkable about the players themselves is very often these computer moves that do appear very unintuitive, these players are spotting them. And that's because of the thousands of hours of practice, tens of thousands of hours of practice against these engines.
Okay, so let me get this straight. We, humans, taught the machines how to play, and now the machines are showing us how to do it. So in a game that was once a display of the upper limits of human intuition, the world's best players are essentially learning how to think like computers. What does that mean for the kinds of results that we're seeing?
When you have two players that have grown up playing against these chess programs that can fit on an iPhone, that can beat just about any human in the world, you're getting this unstoppable force versus an immovable object. With correct play in chess, if people do play the correct moves, it always converges at equality, which is a draw.
So on one hand, technology is changing the very nature of the way the game is played, but it's also changing who plays, isn't it? Tell me about the rise of online chess.
I would say chess has very interestingly become, just over the past few years, a very popular esport.
This is the top 10 chess moments.
You go to the online video game streaming site Twitch, very often among the most streamed things on that website is chess. Last year, there was, 73 or 74 million hours watched on Twitch, and you have top 10 players in the world streaming on that site round the clock.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh,
no.
My gosh. Are you kidding me? No. I quit.
And there's been this very interesting and I would even say unpredictable community that is really built up around chess. You know, this game is centuries old, yet in many ways it's sort of carving out this sort of new school niche for itself as a very popular esport. The website chess.com, they announced a growth of 1 million users per month from March to December of last year. And that just goes to show just how it grew popular and also with the popularity of the Netflix show, The Queen's Gambit.
Tell the readers of life how it feels to be a girl among all those men.
I don't mind it. Chess isn't always competitive. Chess can also be beautiful.
You told me about how AI was changing the game, this what you called machine-like objectivity that it had brought to it. But what about this other technological revolution? Has the way people play chess on the internet changed the game?
The fact that you can actually log on to your phone if you're standing in line or waiting for the subway or doing anything and play against somebody else in the world, whether it's a classical game with 90 minutes for each player or these ultra bullet games that are 15 seconds for each player, the shorter formats are where you see mistakes, are where you see blunders, are where you see sort of more swashbuckling styles of play. So I think on that level, those games are probably more popular for streaming and stuff. And as we were on this streak of consecutive draws under the classical format, there was sort of a worry, I would say a quiet worry, but slowly getting louder, that this classical format, these long, slow classic matches, were sort of falling out of date.
Clocks have been ticking for 3 years since the last World Championship match, David. Finally, it's here.
Yeah, I've been so excited, Kai. I've been looking forward to this for months now, and it's the day. It's the big day. These two.
Okay, so that's the context that brings us to this championship in Dubai. On the one hand, we're seeing this spate of draws because computers have made people so good that they basically end up mirroring each other and no one can really gain a decisive advantage. On the other hand, this younger generation who love the sport and are discovering it seem to have a preference for the much faster versions. But can you tell me, what actually happened in the first week of the championship in Dubai? There were five games. How did they play out?
Well, the first five games were, I would say, fairly straightforward draws.
There has been a huge influx of new chess fans. Could you have a comment or a way of explanation of why we see so many draws?
And that extended this record of 19 consecutive draws in classical world championship games.
Yeah, I would say that so much has been written and said about this. I really don't have a lot to add. We try.
Really what you have is the supercomputers evaluating the moves from these opening five games, you know, had indicated it was the most accurate world championship match in the 135 years they've been doing this. Even in that fifth game, there was only one inaccuracy between the two players. Not a mistake, not a blunder, but even just an imperfect move.
I mean, that's incredible. You're saying that in those first five games, the players played basically as close to perfection as we've ever seen in a championship match.
Absolutely.
So it seemed like these two greats are going to be locked in a stalemate, illustrating your point about the dead end that this 1,500-year-old game seems to have found itself in 2021. And it seems like the old-school model of chess is really at stake here, that this computer-influenced style of play has totally taken over and robbed the sport of something that made it beautiful. But in Game 6, that isn't what happened, Brian. Tell me about it.
Much like the first five games, they were playing on equal terms for the first 40 moves or so, but both players did get into time trouble.
Just over 10 seconds for Nepomniachtchi, he has to decide, does he give up that black bishop for the white knight?
And when you do get into this time trouble and face this clock pressure, you are sort of more liable to make mistakes. Now, neither of them made fatal mistakes, but they played maybe the suboptimal move.
Still a critical
nine
moment.
Nine seconds.
Six.
Four, three. He made that move with just over three seconds left.
All right, so this sounds pretty key, that in this classic form of chess, you get a lot of time to think about your next move, but the longer you play, the more that time to think shrinks.
Yes, and, you know, these players, the memorization and the calculation, you can drill it, you can train it, but at the end of the day, you need time to make these calculations, to make these moves.
So, like, in a game that has become about who can best remember the strategies that they've learned playing against supercomputers, we've almost discovered that there's another more human element here, which is just pressure. I mean, when the clock is ticking, even the excellent memories of these players begin to falter.
Absolutely. And I think what that involves is you can't necessarily take reckless risks, but they have to be calculated risks. And in this case, Carlsen gave away his queen in exchange for two rooks of that belonged to Nepomniachtchi, which is a bit of an imbalanced trade.
Magnus moves the queen up. Game on, ladies and gentlemen. We have action in Game 6 of the 2021 FIDE World Chess Championship.
Nepomniachtchi really had an opportunity to hold on for a draw. But, you know, Magnus Carlsen, it's really remarkable to see him take these tactical positions, take microscopic advantages, and just leverage them and leverage them and leverage them. And on this game went into the fifth hour, into the sixth hour.
So it sounds like Carlsen was making moves that were not necessarily the best ones. Like, he was knocking the whole game off of its perfect trajectory while also wearing down Nepomniachtchi, both intellectually and also physically.
Okay, Nepomniachtchi, I think he's getting a bit impatient. He's just making the moves quickly now. He's hoping that Magnus gives up the winning tries soon. But of course, that won't happen.
But you guys...
Eventually, they pass 124 moves, which breaks the record as the longest game in world championship history.
Most moves ever played in a world championship match. Here it is on the board. And they've been playing for now 7.5 hours, these two.
You know, Friday night is turning into Saturday morning in Dubai. These players are into the eighth hour, sitting across from the board from each other. You really have this battle between Carlsen with his rook, knight, and two pawns, trying to overpower Nepomniachtchi, who just has his queen.
White is definitely making some serious progress.
Yeah, wow.
I think it might be.
And then suddenly, Nepomniachtchi puts his queen on the wrong square.
What's this?
Okay, the queen stepped back, attacking the white rook.
Why? Why is it going this way?
The engines flare up. You know, everyone knows that Carlsen suddenly has mate in his sights.
White has one move that's much better than all the others, and Magnus has just leaned forward. I think he spotted it.
And then Nepomniachtchi runs out of time, 40 seconds, 30 seconds, 20 seconds. He has no move that he can make, and eventually he offers his hand. He resigns.
We have it.
We have a handshake.
Brilliant.
The first decided game, and we hear applause from
an unbelievable scenes. The playing hall in Dubai erupted into applause. You know, for the first time in 5 years, we had a decisive result in a world championship match. It was just after nearly 8 hours, grueling hours, under the most dramatic of circumstances. You know, the world champion, one of the greatest players to ever pick up the chess pieces, sort of validated everything that's ever been written and said about him.
Wow. Okay. So that was game six. What has happened in the games that have followed?
And so after Jan Nepomniachtchi came out on the wrong end of this epic, psychologically taxing 8 hour game six, he really was not the same. And the breakdown continued, you know, with these uncharacteristic blunders that cost him in the eighth and ninth games.
But it's losing.
Oh my God. Did he just blunder?
Yeah, he did. C6.
Oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Blunder on the level that you very, very rarely will ever see at the world championship level. He completely fell apart.
Queen to D8?
And he leaves again.
Honestly, it's difficult to watch when you see these players. I look at them like prize fighters. They're avatars for the human will. And to see a player completely shatter like that under the biggest stage of his career, something he's been striving for basically his entire life, it's very, very sad.
And he finishes it. Wow. Magnus Carlsen, he wins game 11. He defends his title, the Norwegian winning his fifth world championship match.
Coming up, Magnus Carlsen clinches the championship and reclaims chess from the machines for now. Brian, we started out by hearing about your memories of the 1997 match where Deep Blue, the computer, beat Garry Kasparov. And in some ways, that was the entry of computers into this game, and they've since gone on to redefine it. But I wonder if in that sixth game, you might have witnessed another milestone, which was the limits of the ability of computers to reshape chess.
I think at the top level at these world championship matches under this classical format, at the end of the day, in this post sort of computer era, we are going to be seeing a lot of draws and we will continue to see a lot of draws. But I think the meaning of game six, this game that really is sort of this legacy defining game for Magnus Carlsen, the one game that people might remember years and years from now, is sort of the value of this canvas, of this sort of classical time format, these long, drawn-out, slow games where so much can happen over the board, these 8-hour psychodramas that you don't get from these shorter time formats. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like watching these players compete at this level, playing on a knife's edge, where one mistake can spell doom. This format is here to stay, and I think we're all richer for it.
Chess is one of our oldest games, and like everything now, it feels like it's being transformed by technology. But perhaps what that match shows us is that as long as there are humans involved, as long as there's flesh and blood people playing it, there will be no such thing as a perfect chess strategy. And actually, it's that potential for frailty that makes sport so interesting, that gives it the drama that makes it worth watching.
Oh, absolutely. These are still two humans across the board from each other that are finding these moves. Despite all these technological advances, all this hand-wringing that classical chess has become outmoded, a relic of a bygone era, something that's really withered on the vine and suffered in the two decades since Garry Kasparov lost to Deep Blue, chess has not been completely lost. It is capable of sort of conjuring these beautiful, exciting, and memorable games and matches and moments that really represent sort of the height and pinnacle of human ingenuity in artistry.
Brian, thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem.
That was Brian Graham, Deputy Sport Editor for Guardian US, speaking to Michael Safi. This episode of Today in Focus was produced by Sammy Kent, sound designed by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers of Today in Focus are Mythili Rao and Phil Maynard. Additional production by Ellen Lee Beta. We will be back tomorrow with a special episode of Full Story. It'll be the first in a series of episodes looking at the year that was 2021. Okay, catch you then.